Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Can you hear me okay? I'm wearing a lavalier, so I don't know if I'm talking properly to it or not. So if you don't hear me, like, raise your hand and let me know. Except for Greg. Yeah, you can't hear me. I didn't want you to hear me anyways. Yeah, there's a lot of feedback. It's my Jimi Hendrix effects. Maybe it's the beard. All right, we're now closing the options of what's the cause of that. Good morning, everybody. Come in, sit down, gather around. We'll have a fire here shortly. in the chalice, it'll be okay. Some quick announcements. For those of you who've closely read your order of service, it says there is soup today, soup on Sunday today. That is not correct. There is no soup today, so it's not no soup for you, it's just there's no soup today. So you can overcome your sadness at this in a couple different ways. One, you could take a look at our choir with their new stoles. No actual stoles were killed to produce these stoles. If you would like one of these very awesome stoles, there's a very simple way you can get one. And that's by joining the choir. So just keep that in mind. For those of you who are terribly missing the soup, there is a hot chocolate bar or cafe, depending on which you like to go to better. I encourage you to do that after the service and not all rush out now for it. But we'll have that going on. High schoolers, no RE class today. So I invite you all to stay in the service and not hang out at the hot chocolate bar, but it's your choice. A reminder that we are now past our January 31st goal date for receiving pledges for the capital campaign, but that's okay. So if you haven't pledged yet, you can still pledge. There's a January 31st coming every year. We'd really like to receive it before then so we can start building, doing things this coming spring. There is rumor that there is a coming spring. So we've received great responses from almost half our membership with over $300,000 in pledges. There's a thermometer out in the hallway there, so you're welcome to look at that and help fill that in by throwing money to make the building better. Having pledges in hand allows us to proceed with signing a contract and obtaining the necessary permit, so construction on the exterior and replacing the heating unit can begin this spring. There's been a love-hate relationship ongoing with that heating unit for a long time. Mostly it's been love, and it's still working this year, but it did give us some issues. If you have not already done so, please submit your pledge as soon as possible, and thanks, as always, for your generosity. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend, except for the soup today. No soup today. Not only is LCUUC a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation open to all people, regardless of whom they love or how they present gender, we also have a variety of ongoing activities, including classes and discussions on such things as racial justice, environmental issues, philosophy, and TED Talks. So come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all your electronics that you may have with you today as we begin our service. In the bleak and cold winter, we gather ourselves in to light the fire to warm our spirits, to kindle the flame of love and hope. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn number 1029 in the Teal Hymnal, Love Knocks and Waits for Us to Hear.
Good morning. Good morning. As frozen earth holds the determined seed, this sacred space holds our weariness, our worry, our laughter, and our celebration. Let us bring seed and soul into the light of thought, the warmth of community, and the hope of love. Let us see together, hear together, love together. Let us worship. Please take a moment to say hello or introduce yourself to the people around you this morning. And remember in this flu season that greetings to the soul within the other is perfectly appropriate. Namaste to you, sir.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Whether you're raised by wolves or scientists, by craft workers or artisans, you are welcome here. We welcome those in cowboy boots or Converse tennis shoes and Nike or Adidas, mukluks, Buster Browns, Plimsolls, Wellingtons, or flip-flops, in dress shoes or plain, in knitted booties in pink or blue or the colors of the rainbow, in bunny slippers or Godzilla plush foot warmers that roar as you walk, in wheelies, heels, or barefoot. No matter what shoes you love to wear, you are welcome here. Whether you are with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad that you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration.
I feel lonely. Good morning. We'll see if I can work the microphone. I've lost it. It fell off. Let's try that. Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. This is a story I put together and I haven't illustrated it, so you'll have to illustrate it inside your heads today and then go from there. So use your imaginations. Isabella slammed the door to her room as hard and loud as she could. And then she yelled, "I hate this. I hate Jacob. I hate Saraswati. I hate oatmeal." And then she burst into tears. She was having a very bad day, and it was only 8 a.m. First, her mother had promised that they would go to the museum today, but she had been called into work. For breakfast, they had oatmeal, or mud, as Isabella called it. Her mom had been planning to make Belgian waffles, which, in Isabella's opinion, were the best of all possible breakfast foods. Then, while she was clearing the table, Saraswati, the 9-month-old puppy they had gotten from the rescue shelter, and which her dad had named after the four-armed Hindu goddess of knowledge, music, art, and wisdom, came into the kitchen with something in her mouth. That something turned out to be the remains of one of Isabella's favorite slippers. "Sarah, no," said Isabella. Sarah wagged her tail and crouched with front legs extended. "No," said Isabella again, reaching for the remnants. "Drop it." Sarah wagged more and ran out of the room. Isabella followed and found the full disaster in the living room. "No, no, no," said Isabella, her anger just exploding. "Bad dog." Sarah dropped the remnant, her tail tucked down, and she hung her head. Isabella's dad walked in. "What's going on?" he asked. Isabella just pointed to the bits of the slippers. "Did you leave them out where Sarah could get to them?" he asked. "No," Isabella shouted. "I didn't leave them out. They were in my closet. This isn't my fault." Just then, Jacob came in. Jacob was her baby brother. He was holding a tennis shoe from her closet and smiling. No, yelled Isabella, and she grabbed the shoe from Jacob. Jacob was startled by her anger, and because he did not let go of the shoe, he was pulled over as she yanked it away from him. He fell down and began to cry. Don't hurt your brother, said her dad. I didn't hurt him, yelled Isabella. He just fell over. He's a stupid baby. And then she ran for her room. Isabella lay under her bed when her dad came in. Is it okay if I sit on the roof of your fortress of solitude? He asked. Isabella didn't say anything. Her dad sat down. I'm sorry you're having a bad day, he said, and I'm sorry I thought you left your slippers out. I've talked with Jacob. He said he is sorry, too, for taking your slippers out, and he promised not to take things out of your room. Isabella didn't say anything. You know, both Jacob and Sarah love you. They love you, and they love what you touch. They just don't know how to behave yet. We have to teach them. I hate them, said Isabella from under the bed. No, said her dad. I don't think you do. I've seen how you play with them and teach them and how they look up to you. You're angry with them and with your mom for not being able to keep her promise, and probably with me for making oatmeal instead of waffles. Well, I don't love them, said Isabella. Love is a tricky thing, said her dad. We've got this one word that tries to mean too many different things. For example, I love chicken tikka masala. I love my annoying brother, your Uncle Bob. I love books. I love origami. And I love you. Do you think that's all the same kind of love? Isabella thought about it. Maybe not, she said. The Greeks gave us different words for love. They called one kind Eros. That was for romantic love. And we've personified Eros as Cupid, which is what the Romans called him. And we made him into a little winged baby to decorate Renaissance paintings and Valentines. He shoots arrows into us so that two people fall in love with each other. They also gave us the word philia. Philia is love between friends and between brothers and sisters. It's about wishing the best for them, understanding them in some way, and caring for and about them. And then they gave us agape. Agape is altruism, loving people you don't know, loving nature or God, love without getting something obvious back. Which one would be for loving waffles? Asked Isabella quietly. Well, I don't know. I think the Greeks missed out on that one, probably because waffles hadn't been invented yet. But maybe they had a special word for their love of spanakopita, and we just lost that one. Spanakopita is a delicious pastry with lots of spinach and feta cheese. Ew, said Isabella. Maybe we need a special word for love of oatmeal, said her father. Oatmeal isn't fancy or super delicious like fudge brownies, but it is healthy and nutritious and doesn't taste bad, like earwax. We could call it pragmatic love or pragma, love of something that is good for you and that is otherwise kind of plain, boring, and ordinary. Love is certainly in a hug or a kiss and holding hands and laughing together, but I think it is also in the day-to-day tasks like cooking a meal, doing homework, paying the bills, vacuuming the living room carpet, separating the garbage and the recycling, doing the laundry, even brushing your teeth. Love is the ground we walk on. So even when you're angry, it's still there. We just might need another word for it. A quiet scratching came from the door, which swung open, and there sat Sarah with a stuffed giraffe in her mouth, tail wagging. I think someone is trying to tell you she is sorry, said Isabella's dad. Unfortunately, it looks like she's doing so with someone else's favorite stuffed animal. We'll need another word for love for that. And if you would like to come out from your fortress of solitude, you and I can go to the museum today. Your cousin Aria is coming over to watch Jacob and Sarah, and we can go and make some scorecards and see which of us can find the most Cupids at the museum. The end. We have our...
May I have our lantern bearer, Deb? May the light and love of our lantern lead you today and every day. Please help sing the children out. The words are in your order of service. Out in joy.
This piece of our service celebrates the generosity of spirit which makes our community possible. Just now, we are asking for a special display of spirit for the well-being for our home, our building. Jerry Flakus has a few more words about our capital campaign today.
Yes, I am indeed Jerry Flakus. I'm a member of the Capital Fund Drive Committee, so as such, I'm taking my turn today giving a testimony about our Capital Fund Drive. First, I'd like to clarify what Paul's announcement from earlier about that there is no soup lunch today. There will be one next Sunday, the 18th. Now, if any of you can contribute some soup or help out with it, please let me know after the service, because we need a couple more carafes full of soup and some help picking, setting up and cleaning up. Okay, that being said, is everybody here aware that we're having a capital fund drive? Raise your hand. Okay, it looks like just about everybody. Now, I've heard that there are some people that aren't aware of what we're raising the funds for. If somebody in the audience could help me and tell me some of the things we're raising raising these funds drive. Would anybody like to volunteer, Megan?
Siding.
The siding. Okay, the siding. The building is now 45 years old. It has cedar shakes. Cedar shakes are usually good for 30 years. It's 45 years. They're shot. We need to replace the siding. Anything else? Gus?
Windows.
Windows. What are we going to do with the windows? We want more lighting. Anything else? Esther.
The furnace is shot.
Boy. I had the audience planted.
Jerry is my husband, and you don't know how many times he's called here. There is something hissing, and
I'm
like, almost every day.
No, I really didn't plant. I really didn't plant her in the audience, but thank you. Also, the heating plant is 45 years old. We got an old boiler that passes its inspection, but we know it's on its last leg. The biggest problem is the heating control system is an archaic system run by air pressure. And the thing is deteriorating to the point where hardly a week goes by when I don't get a call to come in here. Something is hissing. It's too hot. It's too cold. The system is past the point of no return. We got to replace it with hopefully the electronic system. Also, there's some members of our community here that would like to see us put in air conditioning, which might be part of that if we raise enough money, or geothermal system where we use heat from the ground to augment an electrical compressor-based system rather than a burning natural gas. Is there anything else?
The roof is
actually in good shape. Hey, we actually replaced that 10 years ago, and that's a 30-year roof. We're in good shape there.
A welcoming entrance.
That's a major item that the front and back porches are both rotten, and one of these days they're going to fall in on us. So as we're going to be replacing, we would like to have, especially in the front entrance, to update it and dress it up and make it look nice and have like a enclosed porch out there rather than just an open porch like we have now. Anything else?
Carpeting and flooring.
This carpet in here is 45 years old, which is amazing. And I'm going to put in a plug for who we got this carpet from. It is Klink's Carpet in Heartland. I mean, this is wonderful, but it's 45 years old. Is there anything else? I think we've, okay, John? Right, we've got some proposals in place to modify the front foyer, take some space away from the front foyer, and add to offices and classroom areas. So anyway, as you see, there's a lot of stuff we've got to do. We've got an old building here.
We've been in here for 10 years, and we've got our money's worth out of it, and now it's time to move on to the next level. So if you have not pledged to the capital fund drive, please do so. This is our home. So please take care of our home. Thank you.
Hello, I'm back. So thank you, Jerry. We pass these baskets each week to acknowledge and celebrate the reciprocal nature of our relationship to this community. Just as we need it, it needs us. Whether you put in a quarter, a dollar, or your pledge, it is the giving and receiving that we celebrate. The morning offering will now be given and received.
Thank you for these gifts given and received for the life of this community. As a community of human hands and human hearts, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to each other's lives. Before the service, you are always welcome to come up and light a candle at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud our joys and our concerns, and the worship associate will light the candles for us. If you would like to share a joy or have us hold a concern in our hearts, please raise your hand and an usher will come by with a microphone.
This is Jim. A candle of joy that we are willing and able to host Family Promise for this upcoming week.
Hi, this is Sarah. I'd like you to light two candles of concern. So the first one is George's mom had a minor stroke last Sunday, so a week ago. And fortunately for her, she went into rehab and she should be returning to her senior living apartment hopefully this week. But prayers and thoughts for her would be appreciated. And the second candle would be for my mom, who has managed to catch the flu at age 82. So, of course, that's concerning. And her lungs are clear right now, but we're hoping for a quick recovery for her. So thoughts and prayers for her, too, would be appreciated. Thank you.
Hi. Candle of joy. Had the pleasure of seeing my child in his first sort of major role in a production this weekend at Swallow School, and It's amazing what 35 kids and four teachers with over 100 hours apiece of work put in can put on. It was really wonderful.
My name is Rob. Two candles. Candle of sadness for the death of my brother Jeff to complications with cancer. And also a candle of joy for all the friends and support from this community that rallied around our sadness. And also for my family and how they came together to meet every need Jeff had while he struggled through cancer. Thank you.
This is Mike. Candle of sorrow for a family friend, Marguerite Hillendorf, the mother of our neighbors who passed on Friday. Helen spent a lot of time doing nursing services for her for the last 6 months and just rapidly declined in the last couple of weeks, and she finally passed on Friday.
And we light one last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
Our first reading is by Barbara Merritt. When my youngest child was a baby, the sweetest part of my day was putting David to sleep. At 15 months, he had a demanding schedule. There were toilet paper rolls to unravel, dressers to empty, bookshelves to clear, trash baskets to dump on the floor, papers to tear, pans to bang, books to redistribute throughout the house and office, pigeons to chase in the park, food to massage into his hair, a brother's toy to covet and fight for, and a considerable collection of bright and educational playthings to utterly ignore. By 7:30 at night, little David was stumbling through the house like a drunken sailor, cranky, exhausted, and too tired to walk in a straight line. But when I warmed a bottle of milk and he climbed up into my lap, the transformation was nothing short of miraculous. He would start to drink his bottle, and all the tension and agitation would melt away from his face. As he nestled into my arms, the frantic energy and the frustration disappeared. His body relaxed. He started to smile and hum to himself, and in a few minutes, he was asleep. As the look of peace came over him, I found myself feeling wonderfully peaceful as well. Most little children find a place of comfort, safety, and nourishment, and love in their mother's and father's arms. It's the place to go after a long, hard day, a reality they can trust. Again and again, they turn to this sustaining relationship. Independence is fine. There will be more mischief and exploration tomorrow, but babies seem to instinctively sense how important it is to recharge their batteries and to allow someone stronger to take care of them. I suspect that meditation and prayer are motivated by the same instinct. In our prayers, we are nestled in with reality, adopting a stance that declares we trust what is out there and what is inside. In moments of meditation, we assume a certain confidence, a faith that what is ultimately friendly, capable of supporting our life, and able to restore us to our full strength and potential. In a posture of receptivity and dependency, we allow for the possibility that a power greater than ourselves will hold us, feed our starving souls, and give us peace. Our best prayers are when we can simply turn our faces in the direction of love. One of my favorite Buddhist prayers reads in part, "You may come to this love for a few seconds, then go away and do whatever you will. God's love is unchanging. You may deny the power of love to yourself, then curse God to anyone who will listen. God's love is unchanging. You may become the most despised of creatures and then return. God's love is unchanging. Go where you will, do whatever you will, stay however long you will, and come back. This love is unchanging. No matter what befalls, no matter what you become, love awaits you always. Love knows you and serves you. God's love for you in a changing world is unchanging." Please join me for a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer.
Jim Key, the much-beloved moderator of the UUA, died last June. And this riff on the 23rd Psalm was written in his honor to be read at GA later last June. May I remember in this tender moment that love is my guide, always, shepherding me toward ways of openness and compassion. I have what I need, really, with love at my side. Above me, below me, in front of me, behind me, inside every cell of me, love infused everywhere. Just when the weight of the world I inhabit threatens to drop me in place and press my hope down into the ground beneath me, love invites me to rest for a gentle while and leads the center of my soul to the quiet, still, restoring waters nearby that somehow I had not noticed. And so love quietly sets me once again on its tender and demanding path. Even when the walls close round me and the cries of death echo through untold corners, gripping my heart with fear and sadness, I know that all will be well, that I will be well. When love whispers near to me, glints at the corner of my eye, rests with gentle and persistent invitation upon my shoulders. Yes, love blesses me. Even as the sources and symbols of my pain look on, love blesses me from its infinite well. And I turn and notice that goodness and kindness and grace follow me everywhere. Everywhere I go, I live in a house of love. Love that will not let me go. I live in a house of love and always will. Here ends the second reading. Please rise, embody your spirit, and join in singing "There Is a Love." The words are in your order of service, but I think you know them. We sing, "There is a love holding me," then "There is a love holding us," and when we get to "There is a love holding all," Doug will lead us in a round. You were spectacular. That was really lovely. What is this thing called love? I know it's a many-splendored thing, but what are we talking about? I don't mean the human love that comes in different varieties that have Greek names that Paul so well described in his wonderful story. Eros, philia, agape. In our services, in our hymnals, in UU World, in Touchstones, we encounter a big L love. A love somehow external to ourselves, a cosmic love. We sing, "There is a love holding us." and love knocks and waits for us to hear. Reverend Andy Burnett, minister at Valley UU in Chandler, Arizona, where Linda and I attend in the winter, most winters, closes his service with this benediction. May the universe pour forth its love upon you. VUU, like many UU congregations, recites a covenant every Sunday, which begins, "Love is the doctrine of this church." Consider these words from Reverend Rebecca Ann Parker. Even when our hearts are broken by our own failure or the failure of others coming into our lives, even when we have done all we can and life is still broken, there is a universal love that has never broken faith with us and never will. Now, I have a little voice in the corner of my mind that, when I hear these words, pops up with, what are they talking about? What could that possibly mean? I'm not a theist, and having it be okay not to be a theist sealed the UU deal for me. But I have a suspicious mind. And that little voice goes on to ask, is Big L love UU code for God? A way of sneaking God past us non-theists? So I have pondered, struggled actually, to grasp what this Big L love is pointing at. What common experience the word love is gathering up for us to share. It will probably surprise you that when I began asking, what do we mean by love, my mind jumped immediately to Harry Harlow and his studies on mother love with infant rhesus monkeys and terry cloth mothers. I showed the video of Harry Harlow being interviewed about his early work by CBS's Chris Collingwood, every semester I taught introductory psychology, which was every semester. I can recite it, close my eyes and see it. How many of you saw that video at one time or another? Yes. In the video, Harlow shows that the infant monkey prefers the terry cloth mother to the wire mother, and Collingwood asks Harlow, is this really love? And Harry Harlow responds, well, what do we mean when we say a baby loves its mother? Certainly, we mean that it gets a great sense of security in the presence of the mother. Now, Mr. Collingwood, wouldn't you say that if you frightened a baby and it went running to its mother, was comforted, and then all the fear disappeared and was replaced by a complete sense of security that that baby loved its mother? Harlow, see, I told you. Harlow and his students built a scary mechanical monster to test this. Do you remember the monster with the big, and it went like this? It clanked and clattered. In the video, he goes on to show a terrified infant monkey springing onto the terry cloth mother, pressing its body against her, then relaxing, sliding down and turning to make threat chirps at the scary monster. Secure and emboldened. From Harlow's work, let's take a giant leap, not in time because they were contemporaries, but in abstraction to theologian Paul Tillich. In Love, Power, and Justice, Tillich offers this definition of love. Love is the drive toward the unity of the separated. Love manifests its greatest power there where it overcomes the greatest separation. He goes on to say, fulfilled love is, at the same time, extreme happiness and the end of happiness. The separation is overcome. But without the separation, there is no love and no life. Back to Harlow's monkeys. The test for Harlow that the baby loved its mother was not that it clung to it for long periods, but that contact with the mother both comforted and emboldened the infant. Both Harlow and Tillich are pointing out that we must be separate, independent agents in order for connection, for community, for belonging to be precious, to be something we seek. Love, then, for both Harlow and Tillich, is the promise of connection, of communion. That promise which emboldens us as independent agents. Something else about Harlow's infant monkeys grabs my attention. Just imagine that we could ask one of those babies, does your terry cloth mother love you? I'm sure the answer would be, yes, she does. She loves me bunches of bananas to the moon and back. Well, what are we to make of that? We know that the terry cloth mother can't love the baby in the way we understand a mother's love. But what works for the infant monkey is the experience of connection, its capacity, the infant's capacity to be connected. So another way of understanding love is the deep, an abiding conviction that connection is to be had. Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout is choral director at First UU in Ann Arbor. His poem, God is Not a Noun, is on the Quest webpage. Here is one stanza. We're getting Michelangelo all wrong. God is not the bearded one surrounded by angels floating over the Sistine. He is not Adam with his muscled back pressing the earth. No, God is the closing inch of space between their reaching fingers. So, is Big L love code for God? Yes. Could be. Maybe. No. In the worship materials provided by Touchstones, there is this prayer. The light of love surrounds us. Love enfolds us. The power of love protects us. Love watches over us. Wherever we are, love is. It is adapted from the Unity Prayer, and I looked that up via Google, and discovered that the word love had simply been substituted for the word God. Now, my pondering about this took me to a metaphor introduced by sociologist and theologian Peter Berger. His metaphor, The Sacred Canopy, which is also the title of his book. Berger is suggesting that religion is how humans project their sense of the sacred, their understanding of what really matters, their ultimate concern, to use Tillich's phrase, onto the cosmos. He says, religion is the human enterprise by which a sacred cosmos is established. If we accept that there is and always will be a gap between what we understand and the actual nature of things, how the universe actually works, God, if you wish, then imagine the sacred canopy in that gap and painted on it like a mural our sense, our conviction, our faith about what's on the other side. With this metaphor in mind, we can understand that Unitarian Universalists, particularly Universalists, are choosing a specific and special paintbrush when they say love instead of God. Love is both a noun and a verb. Love leaves room for various visions, theist and non-theist, and honors that most canonical of Protestant convictions, the priesthood of all believers. What they are projecting onto the sacred canopy is a deep-seated confidence that the universe is good, that we are woven deeply into its fabric, that we belong here, that we are created to be connected and to be happy. Victoria Safford makes this useful distinction. The religious life is about the practice of remembering the bonds that bind us to each other, to one another. Religio, like ligament, the sinews that hold us in community, gather us in love, unite us for justice. The religious life binds us to each other, while the spiritual life connects us one by one to a larger love, to holiness, to mystery, to God. There it is, a larger love. Last Sunday you heard Reverend Scott Prinster choose a larger love to capture his sense of, and I quote Scott, the greater reality, the larger love that exists beneath it all, holding you and holding us all in its mysterious embrace, end quote. Let us return to Harlow's Rhesus Monkeys one more time. The terry cloth mother was able to comfort and embolden the infant, but she wasn't enough for it. These babies had serious social problems as they matured, and the terry cloth raised females were terrible mothers to their own babies. What was missing? Interaction and reciprocity. I think one of the most important lessons from the Harlow studies is the effect that these rejected infants had on their rejecting mothers. These second generation infants persisted in trying to make contact with the terry cloth raised mother, in spite of being stomped on and pushed away. Then, if these terry cloth raised mothers got pregnant a second time, there was an incredible turnaround. They became loving, even overprotective mothers. Tillich might have invoked the concept of grace. We need to feel, we need to be convinced that we live in a sacred cosmos that responds to our presence, our being, that we are held in the grasp of creation, that we belong, that we are connected, woven into the web of existence. For some of us, this need is satisfied by belief in a personal God. Did you ever sing, "And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own"? Have you been comforted by the words, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul"? For others of us, the responsiveness of the cosmos is in the gurgling of a stream. the cold caress of snowflakes, the nodding of the daisy, the glorious song of a cardinal on a February morning, a baby's laughter, or the knowledge that we are made of stardust. Goodness knows we are all too aware of our separateness. Sometimes that separateness, that aloneness, is almost overwhelming to the soul, a monster clanking and clattering. No wonder, then, that we celebrate the redemptive moments when we feel with certain confidence that we are held in a deeper love, when we feel a profound connection, that we are embedded in a universe throbbing with a larger love. Redemptive moments from which we emerge both comforted and emboldened. Blessed be.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn, number 123, in the gray hymnal, Spirit of Life. Now, Nancy has suggested we sing it through twice. You're welcome to continue singing it for the rest of the day in your head, but let's do three times.
Life, the shame of joy.
May the love that overcomes all differences, that heals all wounds, that puts flight to all fears, that reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Amen.